set me free. Somewhere in the middle of Montana.
When in doubt, play Merle Haggard.
Give me all I've got coming to me.
I know what you're thinking, hey John.
And keep your retirement and your so-called social security. Big city turned me loose and set me free.
I know what you're thinking. Hey, John, you don't sound like a Merle Haggard kind of guy, so why are you opening your show with some Merle Haggard? Well, Merle Haggard passed away this week. You probably heard the news on April 6th. He was born on April 6th and he died on April 6th, 1937 and 2016, respectively, according to Wikipedia in front of me. And I'm no Merle Haggard fan or aficionado. But when Merle Haggard passed away, I thought about a guy I went to college with named Ed Dunn. Ed was a big Merle Haggard fan. Ed was a Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson fan. Ed was a rebel. He wasn't an outlaw like Merle Haggard was, but if he didn't love the music, he loved the image. Ed loved them both, and I could never understand that. I'd listen to him playing those records, and I thought, wow, how can you like that music? But he did, and he identified with Merle Haggard in ways that I never could. And I was thinking about all of that when Merle Haggard passed away. So I went back and just looked at his bio, and I thought, man, if ever somebody lived the country western life, it was Merle Haggard. You know, people that sing country music these days, it seems to me they're great and the music's good and they wear cowboy hats even though they don't own a horse. You know, it's not real authentic western. You know, if you said, well, what is the authentic western or country western guy or gal who can really from their own personal experience sing that music or write those songs, you'd have to have, I don't know, grown up in Oklahoma. And you would have had to have had a horse. We need some drinking involved. Somebody had to go to jail. You know, the old thing about a pickup truck, the classic country song. But I mean, yeah, you'd have a pickup truck or a train, or maybe the home run would be a boxcar. And then the list goes on. If you just go through your mind of what the things are that would be the touchstones of the country western life. So then you read this and you go, man, listen to this. Merle Haggard's parents were named Flossie May and James Francis. And they moved to California from their home in Chakota, is it Chakota? Chakota, Chakota, Oklahoma, during the Great Depression after their barn burned down in 1934. Ding, ding, and ding. James, the father, started working for the Santa Fe Railroad. A woman who owned a boxcar was in a nearby town, asked about the possibility of converting it into a house. He remodeled the boxcar, and soon after, they moved in. His father died of a brain hemorrhage in 1945, an event that deeply affected Haggard. His mother worked as a bookkeeper. His brother, Lowell, gave Haggard his used guitar as a gift when he was 12 years old, and Haggard learned to play alone with the records that he had at home. Influenced by artists like Bob Wills and Lefty Frizzell and Hank Williams. We'll come back to Lefty Frizzell in a minute. As his mother was absent due to work, Haggard became progressively rebellious. His mother sent him for a weekend to a juvenile detention center to change his attitude, and it got worse. Haggard committed a number of minor offenses, such as thefts and writing bad checks. He was sent to juvenile detention center again for shoplifting in 1950. He was 14 years old, and he ran away to Texas with his friend Bob Teague. He rode freight trains. He hitchhiked throughout the state. When he returned the same year, he and his friend were arrested again. Haggard and Teague were released when the real robbers were found, but he was later sent again to another juvenile detention center from which he and his friend once again escaped. This time they went to Modesto, California, and he worked a series of jobs. Laborer. He was a potato truck driver. He was a short order cook, a hay pitcher, and an oil well shooter. I don't know what an oil well shooter is, but dang if that doesn't sound like something a good country western star should have done. He returned to Bakersfield in 1951 and was arrested once again for truancy and petty larceny and sent to another juvenile detention center. After another escape from that juvenile detention center. Evidently, they didn't make juvenile detention centers that well back in the 1950s. He was sent to the Preston School of Industry, which was a high-security installation. He was released 15 months later and was sent back again after beating up a local boy during a burglary attempt. After his release, Haggard and Teague went to see Lefty Frizzell, the guy whose records Merle Haggard used to listen to in concert. Haggard was backstage, and after hearing Haggard sing along to his songs backstage, Frizzell refused to go on unless Merle Haggard would be allowed to sing first. He sang songs. He tore it up. The audience loved him. And because of the positive reception, Merle Haggard decided he was going to pursue a career in music. He eventually landed a spot on a local TV show called Chuck Wagon in 1956. And in 1957, he was arrested. Once again, he tried to rob a Bakersfield roadhouse. So he was sent back to the Bakersfield jail. They said, "Welcome back. How are you?" They gave him his old cell. And once again, he tried to escape from that place. And they said, "That's it. You're now going to San Quentin." He's in prison in San Quentin. And Haggard discovered what else? That his wife was expecting from another man, which pressed him, according to Wikipedia, psychologically. He was fired from a series of prison jobs. He couldn't even hold that down. He planned to escape along with another inmate whose nickname, of course, was Rabbit. Haggard was convicted, was convinced, though, not to escape by fellow inmates. They said, "No, don't run. Stay here." And so he stayed, and he started to run the gambling and brewing rackets there in the jail with a cellmate. He was caught drunk and set for a week to solitary confinement, where he encountered a guy named Carl Chessman, who is an author and was a death row inmate. Meanwhile, Rabbit, while Merle Haggard is in solitary confinement, he goes ahead and escapes anyway. And while he's out, Rabbit shoots a police officer and is brought back to San Quentin for execution. So there's Chessman's predicament. He's on death row. And then the execution of his friend Rabbit, and that inspired Merle Haggard to turn his life around. He said, "I better get right with the world, or it's going to end that way for me." That year, the prison was visited by a country music star named Johnny Cash. And Cash inspired him to join the prison's country music band. And he did. And he was released from San Quentin in 1960 and put on parole. And that was where the change began in his life. In 1972, then Governor Ronald Reagan of California expunged his criminal record and granted him a full pardon. And that's how you get to be a country music star. You know, you don't get to grow up in the suburbs and then just move to Nashville. You got to do that first to have the real chops. Merle Haggard did. So long, Merle Haggard. It's 12:19. This is John Williams. You're listening to WGN. Nick, speaking of just, square up dudes, there's an expression for you, Bob.
Square up.
Square up dudes, just good old American men. Nick Offerman, formerly of Parks and Recreation,
yes,
and formerly of Manuka, Illinois, was on with Stephen Colbert this week. Did you see this?
I didn't see that, but I know he's really into woodworking. I know that much about him.
Yeah, you know, just woodworking, doing things with his hands, growing a beard, eating a steak. He seems to be the real deal. He's from Manuka, Illinois. I was the French club president of Manuka High School when I was a kid at Manuka High School. I mean, that was my old school. I got friends from Manuka. It was so funny, you know, that Nick Offerman is this big star. So he was on with Colbert, and they did their community news segment. I don't know if I have time to play it all, but it's pretty good, and I don't know if it translates that well to radio because, you know, he's kind of visual. He's so deadpan, but he and Colbert are sitting there talking, and they bring up the fact that he's from my old stomping ground.
Mr. Offerman, you are, if I'm not mistaken, you're from a small town in Illinois, right?
That's right, Manuka, Illinois.
Good town.
My grandfather was the mayor, and my whole family still lives there.
Well, everybody knows we love small towns here on The Late Show. I even do a segment called Community Calendar where I list upcoming local events in a small town. I did one with Eminem from Monroe, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And I did another one with Jeff Daniels for his town of Chelsea, Michigan.
And good towns, very good people.
Yeah.
I imagine that the people of Manuka would love to see one of those as well.
Well, they're in luck, because it's time for Manuka, Illinois' community calendar.
Now here come the graphics. There's the Manuka Water Tower, the fire truck, the church, the city hall, the cornfields. Manuka, Illinois.
Welcome to Community Calendar. Here are actual events happening this month in and around Manuka, which is a word that means good land in Potawatomi.
If it wasn't such good land, the Potawatomi would probably still have it.
Touche. Touche, Nick Offerman.
Next Monday, the Grundy County Chamber of Commerce is offering a workshop on networking business cards, which will teach attendees how to utilize business cards. There are bound to be plenty of people there to network with, so don't forget to bring little scraps of paper to write your phone number on.
On the 28th, there will be a seminar on medical marijuana for police officers held at the Manuka Fire Station. The police station was unavailable because they're hosting a seminar on ladder safety for firemen.
Love seafood from the Midwest? Then head on over and try the new menu items at the Shrimp Barn Restaurant, like cinnamon apple fritters or their signature dish, barn-raised shrimp.
On April 6th, Canine Paw Print is offering discounted neutering services for dogs owned by veterans. It's their way of saying thank you for your service, though the dogs would have opted for a parade.
On April 17th, Morris's Junk in the Trunk Outdoor Flea Market is being held behind the Walgreens on Route 47 from, as it says on the website, 8 a.m. to 8 a.m. Be sure to get there early before all the good stuff has been sucked into a time vortex. And remember, no clothing, mass-produced imported items, or private or commercial vendors are allowed. So get naked, head on over, and buy nothing from nobody.
Next Saturday, you won't want to miss the laser tag tournament at the Shanahan Library. Run around and blast your friends with lasers. Obstacles include shelves, stacked books, and people trying to read.
Speaking of libraries, on Tuesday, head on down to the Manuka Branch Library for a special laser comedy show. It's like a regular comedy show, but with a greater chance you'll be blinded.
Finally, Wednesday is the Manuka State of the Village Luncheon, where Mayor Pat Brennan will answer questions about our community. For example, what's happening with the repairs from last June's hailstorm? And what's the deal with all the lasers at the library?
Well, that does it for Manuka, Illinois' community calendar.
How about that? And those events are not only real and happening, but they're happening this week or this coming week. So, you know, take advantage. Take advantage of that and more. The Mincing Rascals segment is something that we always do on the John Williams Show here on WGN Radio on a Saturday. And today will be no exception. After Bob checks the news in just a minute, we'll ask the gang to opine on all things, not just political this time, although it's almost always got some conversation about the Republicans. We spent more time this time talking about the Democrats and what's happened this past week. It's Eric Zorn, Kristen McQuarrie, and from WGN Radio, Steve Bertrand, and that'll come your way after the news. And the news comes after this on GN. By the way, Bob, did you see the Andy Richter connection to the
yes.
to the Denny Hastert story?
Yeah.
Isn't that strange?
It's a little strange, yeah.
You know, and that's what he said. Andy Richter, Conan Bryant's sidekick, has said that he went to Yorkville High School in the 1980s when Hastert was a teacher and coach there. And we all know that Hastert's in all kinds of trouble now for these sexual assault charges against him. But really what they're getting him for is the hush money scheme. But anyway, he said that federal prosecutors have said, and Richter has confirmed, that Denny Hastert put a lazy boy type chair in direct view of the shower stalls in the locker room so that he could sit there and watch the boys shower. ostensibly to keep the kids from fighting. Coach is there, so we'll behave. But the coach was sitting in a lazy boy chair watching the boys shower. One of Richter's tweets is, "I'm just so struck by how easy it was to do that. Nobody questioned it." He didn't say much about Hastert. He didn't say anything bad or anything like that. He didn't say much. But he just said, "I don't find it's upsetting me now. I'm just so struck by how easy it was to do that. Nobody even questioned it." What a strange wrinkle to that story. We were talking about that on our Mincing Rascals podcast, which we record and drop every Friday, and I'll play back part of that for you now. As we always do Saturday afternoons here on WGN, I'm John Williams. My podcast crew includes Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, columnist Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune, and the first you'll hear here, which is Christian McQuarrie, one of the editorial writers and sometimes columnists for the Trib. And we start with her talking a little bit about the Trib's coverage of the Hastert story.
The Tribune, a couple of very hardworking journalists in the Tribune newsroom tracked down what they believe are four confirmed alleged victims, yes.
This was Jeff Cohen and Christy Gutowski, and they went through all the records, and I think it was just a ton of shoe leather reporting out there in order to find these.
Going through yearbooks, tracking down classmates, and they sort of describe some of them, but they were all connected to the wrestling team, I believe.
And they're all listed as individual A, B, C, and D in the stories. They're not identified by name.
He's being sentenced for hush money in the case of one of them, but if the prosecutors can show mitigating factors and mitigating cases, the idea is that Hastert likely will face time or more time because of the number.
I was particularly galled by the letter of apology that that Hastert submitted this week, in which he talked really vaguely about things that he had done wrong and his regrets for things that had gone on in the past. And I think he deserves extra time in the slam for not coming clean. I mean, it was one of the weaseliest apologies I've read, it just filled me with anger about this case all over again.
I guess you straddled the line between, A, doing that because that seems to be the right thing to do, but if in doing so you admit too much, then you only make your case worse, you know?
Well, he doesn't have to get into every little detail, but certainly to acknowledge what the offenses were.
I always thought there might be more than we first knew or suspected, you know? I mean, somebody who does this, I'm not an expert on that, but you know, I'm not. If you're predatory, I suppose you don't have to be predatory for just one person. If that's some sort of character flaw, then you think that that's going to be there for the next victim and the next victim and the next victim too.
Yeah, and I guess the question, and I can't remember who raised this. Maybe it was in John Cass's column today. Was he a predator, or was he just someone who was trying to deal with his sexuality, and was someone who, in a way, that's a little less totally creepy. Then
they were minors, right?
Yeah, I don't. I'm not saying it's. But the question is, what is the nature of his pathology?
Prosecutors only charged him with this tax evasion issue because he started trying to hide these withdrawals of money to provide hush money to one of the victims. So I think the most. I mean, his attorneys are asking for 6 months to probation. Probation is 6 months. So, I mean, I think he could get away with no jail time. I doubt if these victims actually testify at sentencing, which one of them, according to the Tribune story, says he's thinking about it, that they would be able to do that. But I don't even think the penalty is that strict.
And remember, the crime committed here is paying hush money. I mean, that's what he's being sentenced for. He's not.
And then he lied to the FBI too.
Lied to the FBI.
But he's not being sentenced for sexually abusing kids when he was in a position of authority.
Right. And if I'm his lawyer, I argue that there's no relevance to the testimony of this individual D. I think is the one who's going to testify.
What's that got to do with the hush money or the lying? Is
that
what you're saying, Eric?
It's obviously connected, but it's not. He's not, as terms of a victim impact. He's not. He is not a victim of this hush money. He was, arguably, I think, a beneficiary of the hush money, of the crime, of that particular crime.
So this is a statute of limitations issue.
With the sexual conduct.
That's amazing, knowing what we do now about how victims often will wait a very long time, sometimes months, sometimes years, you know, maybe sometimes they never come out until something amazing happens, like a Bill Cosby case. But knowing what we do now, maybe we should rethink the statute of limitations on cases like these. At least when I get to be king, that'll be an option.
We're all
you are king.
We're all
nodding.
We're nodding here, John.
Yes.
It's not making for a great radio.
Let's move on to the qualifications of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. I was a little surprised to see the two of them spending a whole week bickering back and forth. Even the former president, Bill Clinton, got into this.
I think we saw cranky Bernie, right? We kept hearing about that he had a cranky side. Look, you know I'm a fan of Morning Joe and the MSNBC show. And this came out of an interview of Hillary Clinton on that program. I was listening to it. And Joe Scarborough, the host, said, is Bernie Sanders, after a Daily News interview where he didn't really have a plan for breaking up the banks and things such as that, he said, is Bernie Sanders qualified to be president? Candidate's not going to say no or yes to that, right, an opponent. And she said, well, look, I think there are questions here. Is he qualified? Well, you know, I would have a question about this. Is he qualified? She never said he was not qualified. She never said he is qualified. She probably could have answered it better the way she did 2 days later when she said, if it comes down to Cruz, Trump, or Sanders, I'm with Sanders every day. But she never called him unqualified. The Washington Post did a story. Their headline says, Clinton questions Sanders' qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
And he took off on that. And what he did was something that disappointed me, because I think he's always been very truthful and upfront. And he gave this speech in Philadelphia, and he said, Hillary Clinton said, I am, quote, unquote, unqualified to be president. And she never did. And by saying, quote, unquote, I mean, he's saying, that's exactly what she said.
Putting words in her mouth. Yeah. She actually did. She was.
And so here we go.
Oh, but it's so trivial, isn't it? I mean, good Lord, this is. If this is what passes for controversy on the Democrat side, that's pretty weak.
Well, yeah.
That's
very
true.
I think he's wounded by the gun issue.
Well, but isn't this gloss over the real bombshell this week?
Well,
and that's him saying that the banks need to be broken up if he decides they get too big. And he's not clear on exactly how we'll know when they're too big or how we break them up.
Yeah.
And what is that?
Yes,
mean?
John, you're right. I think that that his interview with the New York Daily News, I think the interview was done a week ago on Friday, and then it was published on Monday, and it was a faceplant by Bernie Sanders. They kept asking him, like, how do you do this? And he didn't seem to know. He'd say, like, you want to prosecute some of the people who are involved in malfeasance? What laws do you prosecute them under?
It's almost like he said Mexico will pay for it.
Right, you know? Right.
Oh, that's so good, Steve.
It was his in what respect, Charlie, moment, I thought.
One of his defenders, who later wrote a column, who is a reporter at the Daily News but not on the editorial board but was in the room, said that actually was cranky Bernie. This reporter tried to defend him in just saying he wasn't answering the questions in a way that made it where he didn't know the answers. He was just offering one sentence answers, and that was sort of his cranky side coming out. But that the paper kind of made more hay out of it than what was necessary.
And he has put some more flesh on the bones in the days since about what sorts of things he would like to see done.
He's a University of Chicago graduate. He's no dummy. I suppose he knows more about what he speaks than I do, just sitting here reading the paper.
Well, Donald Trump is a Wharton School of Business graduate. I'm not sure that these
and
advanced degrees
because,
make you a...
And the two of them have economic plans that are impossible and could be catastrophic. And then there was Hillary Clinton this week. And I just have to go here, Eric. She wanted to show that she was a person of the people. And so she's in New York, and she tries to go through the turnstile in the subway, and five different times she can't get her little pass to work. Bernie thought they were still supposed to use tokens.
Well, that was the thing. She was actually, I think, responding by trying to ride the subway to Sanders' gaffe when they asked him about riding the subway for some damn reason. And he said, well, you put your token in the machine. And they haven't used tokens since 2003 in New York.
Yeah.
And then so Hillary said, well, I'll go ride the subway. And then she has trouble swiping her card. And I have to say this. I was in California this week in this Bay Area, BART. A lot, which is a great mass transit train system there. And they have little cards that as a tourist I was using, and I had a little trouble with the cards.
There's nothing more intimidating to me than trying to navigate a train system. You know, whether it's I go to Dublin and jump on the RT in Dublin, or, you know, even in Chicago, because I don't do it that much.
Right.
I took my kids to New York a few years ago, and I had to get help
Yeah. It's not hard, but it's intimidating.
Don't you think, though, that wouldn't she want to just wring the neck of the campaign worker who didn't have this all figured out?
Right.
And in her defense, a lot of New Yorkers have said they have trouble. You can use it. You can use the system every single day, and sometimes the cards don't work, and you have to swipe them two or three times.
Yeah, so. well, and of course, neither of these people are strap hangers, right? Let's be honest. I mean, Hillary Clinton said, "Oh, I rode the subway a couple of years ago." I mean,
whatever. She hasn't driven a car since 1996.
and when John and I were emailing about this, he recalled the time when George H.W. Bush the elder, had expressed, you know, wonder at new supermarket scanners.
Right. He had no idea how that was working.
So there's a fact there's a fact checker out on that story, though, that actually unravels it a little bit with Bush, that he was, and it wasn't recorded, so this is all just, but the people say that he was actually just making a remark about some new technology with the scanner, not expressing surprise that they existed, and it just sort of has become folklore.
It doesn't matter, does it?
It doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
No.
Well, particularly, I saw some, and I don't know what
it
I was looking
not.
At.
No.
I saw a video, though, today of him at a grocery store, and they were scanning a carton of milk, and he was running his hand over it like he would feel the beam. And I'm sure he was just trying to, you know, animate that moment and have a discussion, but we didn't hear what was being said, but it sure looked like he had never been to a grocery store.
Well, who are you talking about?
Bush.
Oh, okay.
And then you can, just to make the list complete, isn't the mother of all of these, though, Dukakis riding the tank, those moments where you said, I'll show them, I'll be, you know, strong, or I'll be common, whatever it is you're trying to do, and it completely blows up.
Well, it all came in that case. So the George H.W. stuff came up with the subway this week. The tank came up on the Republican side because in Wisconsin, they were trying to get Trump and Cruz to put on a cheese head.
Yeah.
You know, each of them.
Wait,
and
Trump does have a cheese head.
And didn't they get Cruz to milk a cow?
He signed a piece of cheese.
Oh, my goodness.
He signed a piece of cheese. Okay.
He went to a matzo factory yesterday.
Well, can I just pile on? So Dukakis, though, tried to eat some New York-style pizza last week.
No, not Dukakis. Kasich.
Yeah. Thank you very much. And he used a fork. Ineffectively. And that will haunt. If he does not win the election, it'll be for that reason. Golly.
It's like being in Chicago and putting ketchup on a hot dog, right?
Let's pause and come back and get the gang's recommendations, something you are reading, listening to, watching, or surfing. What do you guys like? John Williams with the Mincing Rascals. And on this part of the podcast and broadcast, we ask the gang to recommend something that they're up to. Anybody want to go first? Anything you guys are especially loving right now? Steve.
Enough about the White Sox.
Okay, Kristen, I'm glad you got your hand up. What's up?
So I'm almost completed Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, the book that Tribune reporter, ex-reporter Kim
Barker.
Sorry, her name is escaping me. That is now a major film, and it's all about her reporting in Afghanistan. And it's just, it's entertaining. She talks about mistakes that she made. She talks about her personal life. And you learn a lot about the different tribal divisions between Afghanistan and Iraq and how those wars were actually playing out on the ground. It's an excellent read.
I'm going to go back and read Stacey St. Clair and Jody Cohen's reporting on the College of DuPage. I don't know if you saw that, John, and I know Stacey's a great friend.
I had been following it. Did she put something out about that this
week? They won the National Headliner Award today.
Oh, which is huge.
It's a big award.
In print, yes.
Yeah, so, Stacey's come on with us several times. Yeah. What a story.
Yeah, great reporter, and so great for the two of them. Oh, I sat down with, this is unusual for me, an Anna Quinlan novel.
Oh.
And it's called Miller's Valley, and I'm going to get a chance to talk to her next week. And you know what? Sometimes you just need a nice story, and I'm 85 pages into it, and I found one.
I got two books in front of me that I'm enjoying. One is Jeff Passan's book called The Arm. He's a reporter for Yahoo Sports, and he talks about the arm of baseball pitchers and what an interesting commodity that is in the world. And he talks about Tommy John surgery. He talks about the value that we put on those things, the intricacies of how the arm works. It's really a weird, fascinating story, and you don't just have to be a baseball fan to love it. Eric Zorn, what are you looking at?
Well, just this week we decided we would subscribe to something called HBO Now, which is it's an online standalone.
Why are you laughing at
standalone.
Eric, John?
Well, I thought he was going to end with HBO, and I thought you troglodyte.
No, it's less than a year
it's
old.
It's a sex channel.
What it is it allows you, if you don't subscribe to HBO, which we don't, it allows you to stream any of their their series, any of their specials, any of their documentaries on any device that you have at any time. And it's, you know, like it's $15 a month, so we're probably not going to have it for that long. But it was, it's just an amazing, you touch the thing and the episode starts to run. And it's, I mean, that's just so much the way television's going to go. And as soon as they figure out a way to put live sports into an app instead of having to have a dish, as soon as they do,
well,
I'm gone.
Twitter and this week?
Twitter is doing one game.
Right.
But as soon as it happens that, you know, I'm going to watch the Masters this today on ESPN, and, you know, to not have that would just be, would crush me. So
it's not crushed, and that's our part of our podcast. You can hear it all on my Facebook page. I'm King John there. You can also subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes. They are the Mincing Rascals, and that's Eric Zorn, columnist from the Chicago Tribune, columnist and editorial writer Kristen McQuarrie, and WGN Radio's, of course, own Steve Bertrand. This is John Williams. We'll get you into the newsroom next here on WGN. Thank you, Bob. I'm a Cubs fan. I'm not a crazy, crazy Cubs fan, but, you know, I like baseball, and I have a couple teams, and certainly the first one is the Cubs. I got to tell you, though, this is just a confession. When I heard that Schwarber got hurt, and my son sent me, I didn't see the game, sends me a screen grab of his leg doing things legs can't do. Oh, you know, man. One of those pictures.
Yeah. I don't want to see that. Cause that
I know. I said to Brenda, I said, do you want to see this? She goes, no, I don't want to see it. I said, well, it looks like Schwarber's really hurt, and we might lose him for the season. And when I saw that, when I heard the news, I went, God, I do not believe in the curse. I don't believe in curses. I've never been especially amused by that conversation. But I just thought, you've got to be kidding me. We're off to such a great start. And whatever happens to this team, you knew we could probably outscore everybody. And then some fluke, two outfielders running into each other on the, what was it, fourth game of the season. I'm like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. We're cursed. I just wanted to share that.
I wouldn't call it blessed.
Mark Carmen's coming on in about an hour, and he's going to talk sports on the beat. I just called him up to talk to me for a second. Mark, are you there?
I'm here, John. It sounds like we need some community therapy here. I feel everything that you're saying, and I hate the conversation too, but it did cross the old line because you're a Cub fan, and of course it crossed your mind. That's just going to happen.
Yeah, I know that. And I mean, and you know, it's funny because what did we score? 29 runs in our first 27 innings. I had that little statistic in my head. If I'm wrong, a run, sue me. But I think that's what we did. And I thought, God, this is going to be such a fun season. And we're just going to win all of our games. And if we don't, we're going to, you know, we're really going to be fun to watch. And doggone it, when Schwarber comes up there, you just think you can eat that ball. And he's not the only, you know, slugger we got, but and here's what it did to me, Mark. It made me think, oh, crap, now what? You know, when's the next shoe going to fall? And I don't want to be fatalistic. I don't want to take away anybody's joy of the season. I'm just sharing with you my honest reaction. I went, oh, well that was fun. Three games, and now something like this happens. You know what I mean?
I feel you on that one, too. And it's, you know, you think that they have enough to absorb the Schwarber hit, although – I'm going back and forth on it, and now I'm actually coming around to it. It's a bigger deal than people are making it. I mean, I think it's – listen, the team took off last year when Schwarber came up, and really when Starlin Castro got benched, came back in the lineup, and both of them were providing a huge bump to the offense that wasn't there early in the year. But, yeah, you can't – listen, they can't lose Addison Russell. They can't lose Anthony Rizzo. And, you know, number one on the list more than anyone else in my mind is Jake Arrieta. But this is you know, the Cubs planned for this, John. Let's remember that. But this thing that happened on Thursday night, it was predictable a little bit. And the Cubs have planned for it by going out and getting Jason Hayward and bringing back Dexter Fowler and not trading Jorge Soler and keeping Javi Baez. They put in some insurance. But, I mean, this guy's a unique talent. And I also – as I get long-winded here, I worry about the long term. I mean, you got an LCL and an ACL for a bigger-bodied guy who puts a lot of torque on that thing to hit the ball 7 million miles. So, I mean, there's a lot to this.
On that play, I didn't see it. Were they – was it a communication issue? I mean, should one of them
– People don't want to assign blame, and I don't want to do it either, but the bottom line is you cannot collide in the outfield, period. end of story. And to me, you know, Kyle Schwarber is a DH playing left field. He played the outfield some in college, and he played it very little last year. So he's lacking experience. And you've got a center fielder who is a good leadoff guy and hits for power and all that, but he's not a very good center fielder. So it's just a bad combination. Like, in my mind, in my softball world, John, if I'm playing with a guy in left that is below average, when that ball's in the middle of the field and I'm playing center, I'm screaming early and often, get out, I got it, because I don't want him anywhere near the play. I mean, that play can't happen. And everyone's saying, well, they were both going hard for ball. And they were. That's right. But listen, I love guys who play hard, but you have to play hard and you have to play smart. And that play on both their parts, Fowler and Schwarber, in my mind, there was a lack of intelligence lacking. To me, it's a huge blow to the team. There's just no way around it.
Well, I think all of us get frustrated when we watch outfielders miscommunicate because they don't communicate, or maybe a shortstop backpedaling or going back and then it drops over his head because he thought the left fielder was there and he's not. You see that all the time. And here's the thing I never see, and I'm never close enough to the action to know. Maybe they are talking and I just don't see it or hear it, but I never see somebody's lips moving. You know, I never believe that they're going, I've got it, the way we did in Little League and in high school and the way your college coach would yell at you if you didn't. I don't know why I don't see that happen in the pros.
You really, it's true, you don't see it all that often. And for the most part, I mean, because they play the game so much, there's just kind of a knowledge of that's my ball. But a ball like that, which, you know, a rip shot to the gap, and they're both going 100 miles an hour. And Schwarber's route was not, he just basically ran it directly straight trying to catch up with the ball. There was no angle to it. There's no way they were communicating. I mean, he's looking up at the ball. He's trying to catch it above his head. It's probably hard to do.
It's probably – so there you are. You're running as fast as you can. You're making a thing. You're concentrating on the ball. It's not like a lazy pop fly where you say, I've got it, but – You need to communicate that I am making a diving attempt for the ball, and if you're doing the same, we're both going to kill ourselves. So somebody needs to make some sound.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that you've got it like it's a can of corn, but it means if it gets past me, fine, but we can't collide. You need to say something that at least says we're not going to collide. Maybe they did, and maybe they do more often than I'm giving them credit, but my suspicion is that they don't and that they didn't.
Right. And a lot of times in that scenario, it's not mine or I've got it. It's I go. I mean, I'm going. I go. Get out of there. So, and it's too bad. I mean, look, the guy, you can take, you know, he's trying to catch up and be an outfielder, and you can take a million fly balls in spring training and wherever else, you know, during the season. But the reality is you can't simulate that play. I mean, that's just pure experience. And I would think
or,
when he comes
or,
go ahead.
Well, or pure coaching. I mean, it seems so elementary. You almost can't imagine that Madden or somebody would sit him down, but it's like, guys, here's the deal. If two of you are running at each other and the ball's in between, we need to make sure you don't run into each other. It's a long season. We'll be fine. But don't kill yourselves out there. So what are we going to do? What's our system? What's our scheme? What's our signal? Do we defer to the center fielder? I mean, that's normally what you do. But, you know, if you can't practice that play, you can at least know what you're going to do when that play comes along.
I agree with all of that. And who knows, maybe they've been I would think they've been coached that, but then you get in the moment.
And
Kyle Schwarber is a young guy. He's trying to prove himself. He wants everybody to know that he can play the outfield, and he's, you know, hard-nosed, do-everything-right type of guy. And you love that out of him.
Totally.
It clearly hurt him on that play. And, I mean, how much it impacts the team, only time will tell, right?
Boy, you hate that, too. I mean, because everything you just said is so true. It's like the last thing you want to do is tell them to play the game tentatively. You'll get injured if you play tentatively, too, right? So you need to be aggressive, be 100%, and be smart. And, you know, sometimes these things happen. I'm not trying to assign blame, but I'm expressing, A, my awe and amazement that four games in, I find myself – already with that sick feeling in my stomach, you know, that I didn't want to have this year, at least not four games in. And that was just that little thing going, oh, yeah, it can never go well enough for the Cubs, you know?
It's true. It hurts. Like when you hear it at first, you kind of brush it off. And then you wake up the next day and you read the paper like, oh, it's real. And then like the day after that, they lose. And it's like, oh, it's even more real. Oh, and then what's coming next? And, oh, this is just brutal. But hey, let's keep hope alive, John. They got a lot of talent over there, so maybe they'll be okay.
Maybe somebody else will hit a home run. All right, well, Carm, you come on in, and we'll have a shorter version of this and some other things when you guys get ready for the beat later in the hour.
All right, John. Thanks for having me.
Mark Carman, all right. I don't know. You can chime in, too. The number is 312-981-7200. But I also want to talk a little bit about American Idol. Its swan song was this week. We'll get to that, too. Next, here on WGN. Why are you playing that, Griff? How can I
put it? You put me on. Oh, sorry. Hi.
Turn on your mic.
You got
I got you. What's the deal?
This is Since You've Been Gone by Kelly Clarkson, the first American Idol.
Yeah.
One of her best songs.
You know, I was reading a criticism or review. James Poniewozik, who writes about TV for, he used to do it for Time, but I see him here in the New York Times. Anyway, he was writing about it, and he noted that a lot of the big stars that came out of American Idol came in the first half of the run of the show. Kelly Clarkson and Carrie Underwood, Jennifer Hudson, who finished 7th in season 3. It didn't really turn out the kind of stars later in the years that it did in the beginning of the years. I don't care. I don't think that's... that never felt that important to me when I was watching American Idol. Did it to you? Like, you'd wonder, you know, is Jordan Sparks going to have a career or not or something like that? And usually they didn't have a Carrie Underwood-sized career, but that was okay. It was just about the show. It was about the singing. It was about the judges. I thoroughly enjoyed that show.
I was talking to a friend about it this past week, and he said that sort of feels like complaining that they don't actually get married after the end of The Bachelor. Sort of besides the point.
Yeah, really. And
it's nice when it happens, though.
Well, it is, but a few of them did. And it's not like you ever thought that the winner of American Idol wasn't a good singer. You know, they might not be your kind of singer, but they all were really talented, and they were all fun stories. And I'm just a sucker for good storytelling, and I think those producers knew how to craft a story about each of the contestants that they wanted us to care about. In the beginning of American Idol, you probably remember this too, Griff. Tell me if you agree. The show was a lot meaner. It was more sarcastic. I think that was the whole Simon Cowell influence, and then I don't know what Paula Abdul brought to it, but there was a weird vibe about the show. Remember, there was one time where there was a person who you thought might be mentally challenged in some way, and they made fun of that kid. And you can't imagine the show doing it in the last few years, something like that.
I don't think that was one instance. I think that was the whole – I mean – that was a lot of those audition shows that they would do. You felt really bad about what was going on there for, you know, 5-6 episodes in a row.
That's true. And it wasn't just because those kids were weird or bad singers, but they thought they were good. And so the joke was on them. They weren't laughing. William Hung was laughing with us. The rest of them didn't know how bad they were.
Yeah, he was the only one that really transcended it. And when you find out why they thought they were so good, it's because to get to that point in the audition process, you have to have been told multiple times that you're going through to the next round. They get it's reinforced in them that they're, oh, they really like me. They want me to come back for another audition. So by the time that you're in front of cameras, and also they're being told off camera that, oh, keep going, even when the judges tell you to stop, keep singing. All those kind of things made me feel weird about watching the show at times. But I think you're right. That fell away a little bit in the later seasons. When I was watching the finale the other night, they were showing a couple clips from that time, like oh, remember we used to have those crazy auditions, and I kind of felt like, oh, man, I thought we lost that. But it still kind of lingers because it was a huge part of the show back then.
It was part of its identity, and I guess they felt they needed it. But to me, the identity of, hey, let's put some, you know, eager kids up there, and we'll let them sing their hearts out, and the judges will be funny or sincere, you know, but not sarcastic or mean. Didn't you used to think that Simon Cowell, for instance, however mean or sarcastic he was, he meant well by those kids, right? He was the one that'll give you the cold, hard, honest truth, and at the end of the day, that's a good thing. So Simon was that, right?
Yeah, I think so. I maybe wouldn't go quite that far, but no, I think you're right. I always kind of liked Simon, because I did think that he was being very honest.
Well, he was that, but he was also capable of saying something that was mildly homophobic or just stupid, you know?
Totally,
and mean. And then Paula Abdul, so she comes out, and I thought, oh, my God. Originally, she came out on the season finale we were talking about with Randy Jackson, and the setup was that Simon wasn't going to make it because he's Simon, right? Fine. And I think they actually believe that. So the two of them are talking not that well about whatever, and I thought, oh my God, you really are terrible, Paula Abdul. I mean, I liked her as a pop star. I'm not mad at her, but you know, it just reminded me of how weird she was as a judge watching her stand there
ad
lib.
It really brought me back to those earlier seasons, just especially when Simon came out and they were kind of doing their little antagonistic banter. And
I know.
It was like, I think maybe you both think that this works, and it does not.
I know. Where's the producer going, guys? First of all, everybody thinks she's drunk. Okay, that was the only way you could understand it was, oh well, she's drunk. There's whiskey in that Coke can of hers or cup, and she's bombed. That's the only way I could ever interpret her.
I don't even know if that's it, but yeah. I remember I was like, I didn't miss this.
You didn't think that she was drunk or acting drunk on the early runs of American Idol?
Back in the day, yeah, probably. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know that she was. I mean, I have no reason to believe that other than her behavior. Maybe that's the way she is all the time. But you're right. It didn't work. And so then they were doing their banter on stage, and I thought, oh, this isn't so good. So then they go to, you know, the final. And I thought it was kind of neat the way they brought out all of the previous contestants. You know, some of them were winners, but they were all wearing white. I think that's like when you go to heaven, it'll look a lot like it did at the opening of American Idol's finale. You know,
it was people, like the last episode of Lost or something.
Yeah, really, people coming out in white, and it's got this luminous feel. I thoroughly expected a beam of light to come down and transport them all off to American Idol land. So here's the way the New York Times writes about it. American Idol ended its run the way you'd expect a pop superstar to, playing its greatest hits. As it has for 15 seasons, Fox's singing competition crowned a winner Thursday night, Trent Harmon. Over a decade and a half, Idol has been, as true stars are, self-lionizing, affecting, and silly. Its farewell show was all of the above, kicking off with an army of current and former contestants singing Barry Manilow's One Voice dressed in white as if to commence high mass at the Church of Idol. Yeah, but I'm not, you know, and then he goes on to just kind of dissect it and I don't think love it for what it was, because at the end of the day, especially now, you know, if you click around long enough, you'll find politicians debating and you'll just hate yourself and your country. And then you watch this, and I had the exact opposite feeling. And I didn't watch every season. I didn't watch every episode this year. But I was never disappointed. I always thought it was sort of like I feel about Dancing with the Stars. You know, it's, hey, let's put on a singing and dancing show. Let's get some good-looking people to try their best, and we'll pat them on the back and see who goes to the next round. It's so simple that way. And dang, if that still doesn't work. So it comes down to Trent, and it comes down to LaPortia. Griff, did you have a dog in that hunt? Did you think one of them should have won or was going to win over another?
No, I didn't watch much this season. I haven't watched in a few seasons, to be honest, but I was a fan back in the day.
All right, I'll play two sound bites for you, and then we'll wrap this up and get into the newsroom. But tell me, just based on your fresh take, which of these is better?
I just keep falling.
40 seconds of Trent. Good, right? I mean, that's, you got to admit, that kid's singing some songs there, isn't he? That's wonderful. So then LaPorsche Renee is the other singer. And while he's kind of a good-looking, white, hair close crop, you know, nice kid, she is this diva. And I mean that in every positive sense of the word. She's got an afro that looks like a halo, or she can wrap it around and do other crazy things with it. Her hair should have its own show. And then she's just got this serene confidence in her face. For a young woman who isn't a star, you know, until this show, it's amazing how much charisma she has on stage. And she's got this great voice. And everybody thought all season long she's the one to beat. There she is in the finals. So is she going to out-sing him?
We're like diamonds in the sky.
So that's LaPorsche Renee. America decided Trent Harmon was better. Don't worry, she'll be fine. You're going to hear a lot from her, I suspect, too. And as they signed off, though, as they said goodbye, what's his face, the host of the show, he says, you know, that's it for American Idol. And then I'm trying to remember, I think he said for now. Didn't he just leave the door open a little bit at the end there? Does anybody else remember it that way? The news is coming up next. This is WGN. I don't live too far from that Coon Rapids Burger King.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Oh, my gosh.
And this is not the first such prank. Now, they happen in other places.
Like, yeah, I hope it's
Oklahoma,
not the same.
Oklahoma, California. Shame, yeah, it's not a crime.
So how do you think that is? Like, you get a cell phone, and then you watch to see if they actually do what you're telling them to do? I mean, that would be the payoff of the bit.
Probably so, yeah.
If you're doing it from home, and they do what you said, you don't know, you don't appreciate it. Yeah. You lose the laugh. But so they called up the Burger King and said, what, we're with the gas company?
We're with the fire department.
Fire department.
And it's going to explode unless you relieve the pressure and all the windows.
They smashed out the windows.
Yeah. The employees of the Burger King.
I don't know, to laugh or cry. I'm torn on that one.
Yeah. I am as well.
Because, you know, I have such a soft spot in my heart for fast food workers. You know, they are all of us. Everybody's had that job, and my attitude about them is that they're fine, upstanding, hardworking kids, and they're going to make something of themselves. By golly, they're getting you soda right now.
And so they don't want the restaurant to explode.
and they care enough, they don't want the restaurant to explode.
Or they enjoyed smashing the windows. Maybe there was a little piece of them.
Well, there was a little part of me that almost is hoping that rather than being that gullible, they're in on the ruse. You know, they say, hey, let's do the thing. Although that's kind of ridiculous. But maybe they said, you call up, tell us to do it, then we'll tell the owner we thought the thing was filling with gas and was going to blow up, so we saved the restaurant. And it gives you a reason to...
That's the tragic side, though, that they must feel so bad.
What's that?
That they did that, that they fell for.
Oh, yeah, now, right. Everybody's laughing at him, and here we are in Chicago talking about him. The whole country is probably chuckling at those kids at the Burger King in Coon Rapids. Hey, Bob, will you stick around and do the Vibe Score segment with us?
I would be happy to.
Okay, we'll run some things in the news by you, and we're all going to score them. Hit it, Griff.
I don't believe everything happens for a reason. Us romantics out here, that amounts to high treason. I don't go in for your star-crossed lovers.
This is our Vibe Score segment. We do this on Saturdays at this time. Vibe Score is an app. It's one word, V-I-B-E-S-C-O-R-E. Vibe Score is one word, and if you download it, you'll be able to follow different topics in the news, sports, music, TV, general categories like news, a What's Up, which is a wastebasket for all kinds of things we ask you about. But we give you the news, and then at the end of each of those stories, we ask you a question, and you get to score it. So, Griffin, I presume in the music category, you're asking, what do you think of Left-Handed Kisses? Is that a new song?
Yeah. Duet by Fiona Apple and Andrew Bird.
I thought that sounded awesome. You know how you have a quick reaction to a song? I thought that was pretty good. My gut said 87. Where were you on that one, Griff?
I love both those artists very much, and this one kind of hit me the opposite at first, but I've grown to like it a lot. I'm around a 74.
How about you, Mr. Kessler? Did you like that song?
I'm a little bit below Griff. I need to hear it some more.
Yeah.
I like those guys too, but yeah.
I like Fiona Apple, and I haven't heard her in a while, so I loved her part of that too.
But the Iggy Pop you played a couple of weeks ago, that's my gold standard.
Is that the one?
That was awesome.
Well, you can hear it again and again and again when you have the app, and maybe if you want to listen to it again, that's a convenient way to do it. TV's American Idol Season 15, we asked you to... Were we scoring the finale, Griffin, or American Idol's whole season?
It was the last season, yeah.
It's getting a 68. It deserves a higher score than that, but 68 after 15 seasons, I suppose they'll take that. The Cubs season, we asked you if you follow the Chicago Sports Group. We said, how amped are you for the Cubs this year? 100 is we're going to win it all, and 0 would be the opposite of that. They're right now vibing at an 88. That may be going down because we put that up, you know, during that historic three-game run we were on before the Schwarber injury. I suppose we need to repost that one, Griff.
The greatest 3 days in Cubs history.
I hate to say that. It so feels that way to
we'll
me.
Always look back on those three games.
Shut up. Hey, shut up. We'll repost that question. We're also asking you on Vibe Score, what's your vibe for the White Sox season? And Kristen McQuarrie pointed out to me that when we were 3-0, they were 3-1, so they deserve their props too. We asked you about, in sports, the Villanova buzzer beater. And just as a game, what would you say that was on your all-time hierarchy of great games or sporting moments? And that's vibing at a 90. I thoroughly agree with that. That was one of the great NCAA basketball games, period, let alone, you know, the championship of the NCAA tournament. Yeah. Did you watch that whole game, Griff? Were you there for that?
No, I was not. I feel very bad about it now. I kind of lost interest after my bracket went completely down the tubes and
more
thought, I don't really care about this final game. I'm not going to watch. And caught the replays later and felt like a dummy.
Well, and the shot to send the game, the shot before that one where the guy from North Carolina does the double clutch three, that was a piece of art. That was just an amazing physical thing that kid did. And then for Villanova to come back down and hit it at the buzzer was just historic.
I know. The first one's like just as, if not more, impressive.
Absolutely.
And will be utterly forgotten
in the years
to come. It's a shame. That's how it works at the end of a game like that.
The only love that kid gets is they go, watch the game winner, and then they may back it up to his shot beforehand. That's all he's going to get. He'll be the prelude to the big shot. His shot was amazing. Here's just one little statistic about the NCAA championship this year. More people picked Villanova to lose their first game than win the last game. of the tournament in the brackets. Nobody had Villanova. People did, but more people had Villanova losing the first round than winning the last round.
That seems strange for a number two.
Yeah, I know. Well, the Big East gets no respect, maybe. I don't understand that. I saw a lot of Villanova this year. That I can't say I'm shocked that they won. I didn't have them in there winning it all. I had, of course, Michigan State, which was the law. The Star Wars trailer is out. I watched this yesterday. My vibe for it is a 73. It's fine, but I'm not a big Star Wars fan. A buddy of mine who is a Star Wars fan loved the trailer, and he may be watching it right now. In the movies category, you can watch the Star Wars trailer. And speaking of things spacey, Griff, the Space Pants skit on SNL with Peter Dinklage. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it mostly consists of him as some kind of strange... I honestly couldn't explain it, but he sings a song about how he's wearing space pants. And that's what he is, of course, wearing space pants, and that's what the song is all about. And that's basically the whole sketch.
Well, there was a setup, though, that two guys were like mob guys, and they were going to kill these other mob guys in the restaurant, but they couldn't get to that because of this distracting, odd new wave type of thing.
Wow.
Yeah, at one point, one of the mobsters with guns says, "Is that more important than this?" And they say, "Yeah, kind of."
So, Bob, 1 to 100, what do you give the Space Pants skit?
I give it a 99 for originality. In terms of making me laugh, maybe like a 70-something. It was entertaining, but it wasn't like fall-off-my-chair funny.
68 is
okay.
The score
yeah.
our users are giving it right now.
That's about right. It suffered from the like cardinal sin of most SNL sketches. It just went on too long.
Yeah.
It was about 6 minutes, and it could have been a minute and a half. But it made me laugh enough that I ranked it a little higher than that.
We posted the Gap ad, which some people have decided is a controversy. I'm not sure it is. But the print Gap ad where they show these young athletic Cirque du Soleil type girls all striking empowering poses for little girls. Four of them are white and one of them is black. The short black girl is standing there looking consistent with the others. But the taller white girl next to her has rested her elbow on her head. And the hashtag was something like, you know, white girls athletic, black girl headrest. And Gap actually apologized for the gaffe in putting the black girl in a diminished pose. I couldn't believe they apologized. I didn't see anything wrong with that ad. I know I'm not a minority, but I think, you know, you don't have to see it in everything. Anyway, you can score that on VibeScore when you get the VibeScore app. I actually don't have the score of that one in front of me, but that's one of the kinds of topics that we're talking about. And then one last thing, the TV's final episode this season of Walking Dead, was that too dark or not? And we will post today, I didn't know when to put this one up, Griff, because I don't know how far along people are on some of their TV shows, but I'm blocking on the name of the show. Help me out now.
I've got nothing to go with here. I would love to help.
House of Cards.
Oh, yeah, sure.
What a ridiculous ending and what a terrible end to the season.
Oh, wow.
I'm not spoiling it for you. We know it's a cynical show. That was over the top. I turned to Brenda and I said, if they ever make another episode, I don't know if I want to watch. I'm so ticked off at the end of this series.
I sort of reached that point with that show at the end of season two, so.
Well, I got over the preposterousness of the series and I said, let's just go with the ride and see where it takes us. And this season was better, but it got so ludicrous at the end. And this dark, dark finish was... The takeaway was politicians are terrible people and we're all screwed. And I thought, really? That's what I've sat here for four, you know, seasons for? Okay, that's my takeaway.
No, yeah, there is a certain point when if that is going to be the message, you expect a little bit more from it. You get a feeling of like, yeah, we know. You know, well,
I know, right. And
there was a George Clooney movie called The Ides of March that I felt like a lot of people had the same criticism of. It was like, Yeah, was that really what you got me in the theater and I spent the hour and a half on? I know. We know.
And I something else. It wouldn't have killed anybody to give us a little bit of a Hollywood ending to at least one of the characters. That is, somebody we'd like to see get it in the end, get it in the end. But we didn't
get a lot of that. Man, you're really in the wrong at the wrong store for that, though. I think that's on you if you're watching House of Cards.
I know. The bad guys win. Vibe score is one word, and you can follow all of these conversations and score along with the rest of us. VIBESCORE. The app is free. All right, let's catch up with the boys from The Beat. Gosh, I wonder what they're going to talk about next on WGN. I know Adam Hogue's getting ready for The Beat. Hey, Adam, how are you? It's John.
Hey, John. Yes, we are both here, Adam Hogue and Mark Carman. I have no idea what we're going to talk about today.
John, I was on an extended call with former Cub outfielder, Comcast Sportsnet, Todd Hollinsworth, the last 20 minutes, just making sure that I was fine in my take that, yes, the experience of Kyle Schwarber played a huge part in that play, and I have been confirmed by a major league outfielder that, of course, the experience of Kyle playing the outfield played into that play. So
you mean the inexperience.
Exactly, the inexperience. Thank you for that, yes.
Yeah, well, you kind of talked me off the ledge a little while ago. I don't know. Are you out there, Adam? What's your take on the Cubs now? Is it a different season, or we're still okay?
I don't think so. I think this is exactly what Theo Epstein planned for this year. Jed Hoyer.
You mean an injury?
I think that when they surprisingly signed Dexter Fowler, when they surprised basically the whole sports world that day, when Dexter Fowler showed up to camp, 2 weeks into spring training, everyone said, "Well, what are they going to do? They have too many outfielders." So what happened to that? What happened to too many outfielders? They lost one. Well, this is what they've insulated themselves against by adding Ben Zobrist, adding Jason Hayward, bringing back Dexter Fowler. So
Soler, and
Soler hasn't even been playing. So you get him in the lineup, and maybe he's not going to be as great as Kyle Schwarber, but I don't think the season is over by any means.
I hate the feel of it, though. You know, we were having so much fun there.
Oh, it's such a buzzkill. It's an absolute buzzkill.
Totally, yeah. Griff was pining for the nostalgia of the first three games. You know, it's like, I know, the old days. I got to get out of the way. I took too much time earlier, fellas. I love talking to you, but let's talk more again next week, all right?
Sounds good, John.
Thanks,
Have a good show. We'll get you ready for the news coming up next on GN.